So come to a stop. And then you'll get about a minute each. And this last question is just, in what ways might you have freedom by not clinging to those particular views? In what way does freedom open up for you in not having those specific identities or those specific views? Okay? And then let me use my phone as a timer so that, because we're only doing a minute, and if I use this thing, I don't know where it is on the minute. So decide who's going to go first, and you can begin. Yeah, how might you find freedom by not clinging to those? Okay, so stop, and we'll switch so the other person will get a chance to share. Okay, you can begin. Okay, so thank your partner and come back to the big circle. So anything you want to share into the large circle? What was that like, or what did you... maybe was there something that surprised you? Or is there a nugget? Yeah.
When we were talking about the different identities,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I was telling Melanie, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, I identified as an only child, but for 32 years, I've known my half-sister, I've known her for about a year. We had a relationship for about a year where we lived together, so it's not that we've had an ongoing, you know, conversation or that whole kind of bit of huge gap of silence, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's been there.
Right. Yeah, that's great. And what would happen if you let go of it?
I think a lot of pain would come up. I'd have to address
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I've worked with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have. But there's just that taking the leap that I think because I don't really know what it would be like.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah,
it might actually bring some freedom to reinvent who you are. Yeah.
In that vein, we kind of ended up talking on that vein, we kind of approach at the final moment roles that were emerging from those views.
Uh-huh.
Those roles had certain responsibilities to them,
mm-hmm.
and they were very different based upon what our views were. So when you asked if you might experience a new freedom from changing the view, it allowed us for a moment just to say we might just change the roles as well.
Uh-huh.
You might be free from a role that you're playing or embodying, not playing, but embodying.
Mm-hmm. Great. Any other comments? One over here.
I'll share one that I shared with Melanie, and it surprised me. 2 weeks ago at our Sangha, we had a monk, and he was talking about compassion. And the thing that he said that struck me was that I had asked him about loving, you know, like your wife or your child or whatever. He says, love everyone the same.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, that's really hard to do. And one of the reasons that affected me was I'm really involved in politics. And so I have an almost violent reaction to what's going on, especially to a certain politician. And on the way home, I was thinking about that, and all of a sudden I thought, who does that man go to when he's feeling bad? Who does he go to when he's hurting? Who does he go to for advice? Who puts his arm around him and gives him a hug? Nobody. And so on that level, I have compassion for him, even though I don't like what's going on. And then I also, it's even harder because there's a neo-Nazi group that we protest on Tuesdays. There's a neo-Nazi group that was confronting us rather violently. And that one was really hard for me to apply that same thing to them. But I'm able to a certain extent. But, you know, letting go of that violent reaction and substituting it with that makes a big difference.
Yeah, so let me ask you this question. Do you think that you are your behavior?
Only in the moment.
Uh-huh. And how many times does your behavior change through a day?
Oh, it changes all day long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially with doing since I've been doing the meditation and becoming more aware, I often catch myself having certain feelings or certain prejudices or certain whatever and saying, you know, I may not have an alternative for it at that particular moment, but I don't have to continue behaving that way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that someone who is maybe expressing hate may not be that hate?
I think no, I don't think they are entirely. In fact, sometimes I think they're just scared.
Aha, uh-huh, great.
That they're a very small child in there that is really scared.
Yeah, great. So we have a little opening, right? So this is to see how perhaps we have a view of someone, an idea that is based on something that for all of us in our practice, we get to see how often our emotions change, our thoughts change, our behaviors change. We get to see the impermanent nature of those. And yet sometimes what happens is we associate permanence to those. that person's a hater, and therefore I hate them. Right? What happened there? Right? There's an inversion or a perversion of view and a perversion of our thinking that we're not seeing. I think that's an important piece. Thank you. Any other comments, thoughts?
Regarding that particular politician, I just want to share what has helped me, because November of 2016, like many people, kind of went underground for a while. And it's something that Ram Dass has a practice of doing, which is putting him on the altar. And the talk that I heard and that I go back to is, I think it was Jack Kornfield who was saying, you go into Ram Dass's house and you see the Buddha and Kuan Yin and Jesus and then a picture of Dick Cheney. So that's helped me kind of.
If you know who Robert Thurman is he would often talk about in the Tibetan practices, there's this idea that everyone has been your mother. And so he was in that era of Dick Cheney, right? So he's like imagining that he's got Dick Cheney as a baby or whoever else, you can name whoever else that is, or that they were your mother. And wow, how interesting or challenging that might be, right? So, to see that our identities and our views can change. And even the idea of being an only child or, it's been a little while since my last parent died, but the moment that my mom died and I was like, oh, no parents, I'm an orphan, right? So that we can actually have these different ideas about who we are and how we relate, that there are these different changes in our identities that are happening throughout our lives, that maybe at some point you take on a role of a parent and yet you're still in a role of a child, or that you have a role as a sibling, or you have a role as a friend or some significant other. There can be all these different roles that we have, and sometimes those even change. I did this exercise with a person, and he said, well, I'm a grandfather, and I can't imagine not having the role of a grandfather. Who would I be without being a grandfather? And yet I've known people who have been estranged from their grandchildren, maybe not by choice, but they have no access to their grandchildren. And so that you can see how clinging to those identities can cause a lot of suffering. And even the idea of an identity of political view, or even an identity of a religious view, or identity of a sports view. How rabid do people get about being, a Warrior fan or a Laker fan or a 49er fan or you name it. People get pretty uptight around their identities. And so, what if we held them more lightly? It doesn't mean that you can't still have a favorite team. But what would it be like to hold that differently? Even the view of what a meditator looks like. Because we have certain ideas about what that looks like. And I'm becoming more aware in terms of trauma focus, that sometimes we have an idea about meditation has to look like sitting still and sitting with whatever the discomfort is or whatever is going on in your mind. But for someone with trauma, for someone with PTSD, to be told, just sit with it, might actually be re-traumatizing and actually damaging. And so that we actually have to hold those ideas about what it looks like lightly. Because maybe mindfulness looks different. I've taught some of these compassion practices to physicians, and to try to get them to sit still and meditate for any length of time is hard. But I can ask them to bring mindfulness into washing their hands, because they wash their hands throughout the day. And if I tell them, take that moment of being present for washing your hands as a way to let go of what just happened, and as a way to meet your next patient, it makes a huge difference in how they present and how they are present for their patients, and how they're able to maybe even drop the stress for the moment of washing their hands. And so they come through the day with less stress, more presence, more ability to hear. So what mindfulness looks like could be very different as well, and how we hold that, how we hold the view of what that looks like or who I am is very important. Because otherwise we can get very tight. We can get very attached to what that should be. And as some teachers would say, it's not very good to should on yourself. So can we stop shoulding? And be present. Hold things a little lighter. Okay, so I want to take a moment to just take a break. And actually, I want to show you a video first, and then we will do a short sitting to let all of that integrate. But I want to leave you with a video. This is a video of a person by the name of Anurag Gupta, and he talks a little bit about what the price of bias is, or what it costs us. And then this is out of a TED Talk. And hopefully the volume will be okay. We'll see.